All right, I'm going to read something from your book and then let's talk about it. You say, successful people are concerned with pleasing outcomes. Unsuccessful people are concerned with a pleasing process. A successful person is totally focused on the result. An unsuccessful person is worried about how it feels doing it.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm sure tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, then. Thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show. Take notes and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
All right, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. Lance Tyson, president and CEO of Tyson Group, is a seasoned entrepreneur known for training sales talent for some of the biggest names in professional sports and entertainment, including the Dallas Cowboys, who will lose to the Philadelphia Eagles this year twice, the Cleveland Browns, the New York Yankees, the Miami Dolphins, Fenway Sports Management, also probably part of the New England Patriots, but we won't go into that either, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the San Francisco 49ers, the 2016 NBA Championship, Cleveland Cavaliers, who I loved, among others. As the author of the best-selling book, Selling is an Away Game, and we can't wait to talk about that, Close Business and Complete in a Complex World, Lance is a leading authority and recognized speaker and trainer who draws on more than two decades of sales experience to educate others on how to succeed in sales. And a bonus, he's from Philly. ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the great Lance Tyson.
Lance, well, we're happy you're here.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Is that a good intro?
It's a great intro. Yeah, you guys a lot.
So. I didn't swear at all, so you can use it someplace else.
Oh boy!
Actually, I'm glad when I first downloaded your podcast, I'd listen. I go and see the little E for explicit. I'm like, this is my kind of podcast.
Totally cool. Yeah, totally cool. So, how'd you start training sports teams?
Yeah, you know what was interesting? I actually didn't go after. We just don't work with sports teams, but I was told by my board, really the only thing you have going for you is your client list and your employees, most companies, right? So mm-hmm. we have a good client list. And ironically, it was in Philly. And I was with Dale Carnegie training at the time, and I was only allowed to sell sales training at Dale Carnegie. A marketing guy out of Delaware County, that's right outside Philly, anybody listening. And he said he was with a chamber of commerce at one time. He goes, we should just strike a deal with the Eagles. We'll go and do some sales training for them, and we'll actually trade sales training for tickets. We could use it to entertain clients. So I was the one that was designated to go in to train. And I had kind of just befriended a lot of the guys that worked. And it was the Eagles, right? And it was right before they had built the new stadium and really had just started connecting with a lot of young execs there who were starting their careers. And after that, you know, we had some success. They all went through the program. I left Philly, moved to Cleveland. I convinced my wife to go kind of cross state lines. We moved to Cleveland. I buy the Dale Carnegie operation there. And I noticed in the paper one morning that Len Komorowski, who's the CEO of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who was with the Eagles as a VP of sales, I read in the paper that he had went to the Cavs. And I called him up with a cell and I go, hey, Len, I see you followed me to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Cleveland right now. I go, I am. And he goes, why don't you come down Monday I want you to meet my senior team. I want to do what we did at the Eagles with the Cavs. This time I got paid for it, right? Instead of just trading tickets.
Cool.
And all the execs there had really since then had moved on, and their managers became managers at other places, and we just expanded. So we kind of, you know, good reputation, got great results. And we followed those folks like Chad Estes, who is his VP of ticket sales, now is the most senior non-Jones person at the Cowboys, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Bulbuls, who was there, say that twice. He runs Vegas Golden Knights. So, you know, they just kind of pull you with.
Yeah, they never leave the industry. They just change teams.
Exactly. It's very ancestral in pro sports. They're all interrelated somehow. And if you get good results, they kind of bring you with them.
Do you know Flavel?
I do know Flavel. He's actually with Elevate right now. I talked to him the other day. Yeah. Well, I know you know Mark Jackson too, don't you?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a lot of people in common.
Oh, totally. And they don't go. I love Flavel. He's got brains. He's got success track record. He's just a very nice person. And
he's doing really well in the role he's at right now. He's with a group that helps really when they build a new stadium, he kind of goes in and sets up their sales teams and things like that. He's successful at what he does.
Cool. So and I worked with the Hornets for like a decade.
Yeah.
Even when they were the Bobcats. Couldn't sell a ticket, but we gave it a good shot.
It's hard to sell a lot of these teams, Jeff. It really is. I mean, you can be a fan all you want, but the problem, what people don't realize is the tickets don't sell themselves, and there's so much business B2B selling in pro sports and marketing that it's just not filling a stadium. It's selling their expensive suites, their sponsorship deals and stuff like that.
That's what they really want to sell anyway. They could leave half the ticket. They could leave half the seats empty if they could just sell all the suites and sponsorships.
Well, that's where the profit is, right?
So it seems like you found a really great niche and that you're penetrating it one place at a time. What would you say to our diehards who are trying to do the exact same thing but can't always rely on the head guy? Like, you guys are throwing out names here, right? Like, this guy left this team and went to that team. So what would you say to them who, if they can't always rely on someone leaving and going to another branch and that's their in, how can they penetrate more of their market share?
Well, you know, I think it's two things. Number one, about our organization, I have about six salespeople. I have a team of account managers that go in and attack, target and attack, like you were talking to the one guy you had on a couple sessions ago, where he's talking about prospecting and things like that. And I think that's obvious, something we have to do in sales no matter what. You know, smile, dial, use the trial, go the extra mile. I mean, you can spend all day on LinkedIn.
Very well spoken. Smile, dial, go the extra mile. I love that.
I love it.
Trial, go the extra mile, right? Like, but at the end of the day, I think that's one thing. And there's a lot of prospecting that went on there that still goes on. I can tell you my folks are on the phone with all the people we don't do business with. We do stuff outside of pro sports too. We do a lot in insurance. We do a lot with tech companies and things like that. But I think the other thing is what you were talking about. I think it was two podcasts ago that you guys were talking about. Look, you got a prospect, but at the same time, you got to have a business of referrals. And Jeff, you've talked about that for years. I mean, number one, people fail at just asking for a referral, even if they don't get the business. Two, they ask for one referral, they didn't get three, or they just don't ask at all. So I think that it's this combination of how you go about your business. Look, anybody can close. I don't even think there's any skill in closing a deal at the end of the day. I mean,
if the guy wants it bad enough, they'll buy. You got to talk your way out of it.
Exactly. And two, the hard thing right now is prospecting. You know, all these, I was on the phone the other day, and I'm sure you guys get this too. I get blasted on LinkedIn with all these demand generation companies where we can get you 10,000 appointments in a month and blah, 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 blah. And we actually, a couple of years ago, we had a demand generation company where we did a lot of, we actually, for really complicated sales processes, we'd set appointments for them, and we'd literally hire a group of young folks, train them how to sell, and on behalf of insurance companies and tech companies and things like that. And what we learned in that time, it still takes a lot of hard work. I just had somebody at Madison Square Garden call me the other day and say, Lance, how many dials do you think it takes to to win an appointment. I said, B2B. He said, yeah. I said, well, go do your homework. Go to like insidesales.com. Go check. It's probably somewhere right now, based off what my people are doing and what we see, somewhere between 75 and 112 dials. That's if you don't do anything else, right? If you don't touch it the other way.
But it's one if you have the right target.
Well, that's right. You got to have the right target. But the other problem is, like you guys talk about all the time, we don't hire salespeople to be researchers either, though.
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean? We could have done better than what we have. So you got to take a limited amount of information, target, and then have, you know, what do you say? Sales calls, sales balls, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the bottom line is you have information at your fingertips right now that's never existed before.
No doubt.
Whether it's Hoover or Google, you can in 2 seconds you can find out something about someone on LinkedIn or on Facebook. I know where they went. You know, when we looked you up, just as an example, I knew you were from Philly. I knew that I could drop an F-bomb in 2 seconds. I knew you were probably either Irish Catholic or you were a Jew or you were Italian, and those because exactly. Those are the three. You know.
That's how we grew up. We grew up in neighborhoods. That's what it was.
Exactly.
All neighborhoods. Yeah.
And but you know, obviously grew up out of town. You didn't grow up in the city. You grew up in some kind of goofy ass suburb. Did you go to Catholic high school?
No, I went to Plymouth White Marsh, but I went to Catholic grade school. So you got me.
Wow.
I went to an Irish Catholic grade school.
Whoa. Yeah.
You get your knuckles wrapped.
Sister Consolata was a very, and if anybody's listening to my friends from Philly, Sister Consolata and Sister Helena, they were mean.
Yeah. Okay, so
I don't think they're listening because we are rated E.
Yeah.
And, I don't think they're with us anymore.
Yeah, I think they've gone to the great beyond, but I would only challenge you with this. When you're trying to train somebody to pick up the phone and prospect effectively, you have to have questions that go with a script, and most of the time they only have a script.
Mm-hmm. It's true. We don't even, and you know, it's interesting. What we do now is we go into an organization, we assess, design, train, coach, and we spend a lot of time assessing, and we do pretty hardcore skill set assessments. We don't do things like DISCs and stuff like that, which is looking at personality traits. We actually use a couple organizations that we dig in, and we can tell pretty quick if somebody has the propensity to be able to actually pick up the phone and do it. And one of the lowest scores that we find is quickly assessing somebody's interest level. And, and salespeople really struggle with that because it's like you said, it's within 1 to 2 questions, or said another way, it takes about 7 seconds to get somebody's attention, right? It takes from about 7 seconds to 21 seconds to get their interest. And then and most salespeople tell you, the longer I keep them on the phone, the better off I am. So you got to be able to come out of the gate strong. But we teach call flows now. We don't even teach like script, because we go into some organizations like, here's our script. I go, well, what happens if the person goes off the script? See, something more like a Waze app, right? It's a directional thing.
Yeah.
But it comes with how are you going to get their attention? How are you going to get their interest?
Are there strategies you use right now to get their interest right away?
You know, yeah, and I'll share one with you.
All right.
This is so, we sold our call center in 2017, and we spent a lot of money, like, training really young salespeople. We'd hire them right out of college and tell them we'd get them a job in pro sports or with an insurance company. So we had to train these folks B2B. So we started testing a lot of stuff. It's so silly if you think about this, right? So if Jeff answers the phone, he's probably going, this is Jeff or this is Gittimore, right?
Yeah.
And if all you need to do is say, is this Jeff, and repeat it back. And he'd probably go, yeah, who's this? Well, now all of a sudden I'm within 7 seconds, right? Or like, say, Jennifer, I was calling you and you're like the VP of sales for a tech company. I said, this is Jennifer. I'd say your last name. And then I understand you're the VP of sales. And you go, yeah, this is. And it's so silly, right? But there are things people would say yes to. I have salespeople that look at our trainers and myself, like we have three heads. They go, that's redundant. I go, it works.
It's a single right. Course. Yeah, redundancy is okay as long as it works.
No, exactly. Yeah. Well, you're just getting the person to say yes, yes. All the sale is anyway is a series of yeses.
But
right?
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. Just listen to Tyson and his attitude. He has a Philadelphia attitude from the get-go. He is certain that he's correct. He is absolutely straightforward in his communication. and he leaves no doubt. There's no way you can go in there. Yeah, but what do you think about? No, it's a fucking yes.
Well, I mean, everybody thinks they have these, like, you get these sales folks. I was just on the Memphis Grizzlies. They'll go, and I was coaching the salesperson. He goes, oh, this is John Smith. I'm with the front office of the Memphis Grizzlies. How are you? And I go, do you really freaking care how they are?
No.
What if they say they're terrible? What are you going to do?
Yeah. Right. My wife just left me. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's talk about your book. Your book is called Selling is an Away Game. How did you come up with that? Like, tell us the story behind that. I feel like there's something there.
Well, I was listening to how you came up with the title of your book the other day. I actually saw you on How to Sell in a New York Minute. Was that it?
Sales in a New York Minute.
Sales in a New York Minute. And it was like a 3-minute kind of intro. And I, ironically enough, I was just watching it like on a soap there. And I said, that makes total sense. And I know it was probably painful to come up with a title, right? And you kind of think that. And Jeff, looking at your books, right, the sales manifesto or sales Bible, like I really struggled with it. And finally, I went back to some notes of stuff I learned a long time ago. And somebody said to me one time, sales is an away game because it actually happens in the mind of the buyer. So you're just playing this away game all the time. And I don't think sales is that different, but I think, and you guys have said it several times on your podcast, what has changed and has made sales a little bit more dangerous is right now, I can't tell you, like you said earlier, I can't tell you anything you couldn't find out about any product or service. I can go online and figure out how to make an incandescent light bulb if I wanted to.
or an atom bomb.
Exactly, or a nuclear bomb. Like, bottom line is, so when you go in and meet with people now, even if I meet with people on training, they can do research on organizational development and behavior change and all kinds of stuff like that. They can find all kinds of content out. So you're playing this away game now because you actually have to find out pretty damn quick how much the buyer knows about your product or service or industry. And if you don't engage them in that and at least entertain them in that a little bit, you're probably going to lose some credibility and rapport.
And because an opportunity. You're going to lose your opportunity.
No doubt. See, when you and I started in sales, like, I was actually the expert. Like, I had all the information.
No, I was the expert.
So, I mean, that's why we say, because it happens in the buyer's mind, and playing an away game is way harder than playing a home game.
Okay, so break it down. Like, you're really into sports. I'm not. How is it harder?
Well, I mean, my sons play ice hockey. I didn't play ice hockey, but I can tell you, my one son plays college hockey right now, and he knows where he plays up in New York. He knows right where to hit it off the boards in the home arena, where it gets a great bounce off the door or something like that. A basketball player would know where not to bounce the ball. A football, like talking about the Eagles. Yep. The Eagles players knew at the vet where not to run, so they destroyed their career, right?
Yep.
So playing a home game is easier than playing, and you got fans against you. So I think right now that's what we're asking salespeople to do. They're going up against people that might know as much or think they know as much as the seller has product knowledge-wise.
Okay, so let me throw one thing at you, and then we can go to the next thing. The Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles are known for traveling to games. Like, when the Eagles played the Panthers, there were as many Eagle fans cheering as there were Panther fans, and the game was in Charlotte.
Right.
So,
what is Charlotte?
Yeah. Well, but the bottom line is that encouragement helps a team to be excited about winning, or more. You know, they're away. Yeah, they're down on it. The fans are against them. People are booing like crazy. That's why Seattle can beat people. In Seattle, because the fans are so vociferous, they call it the 12th man.
Yep.
And so you're looking at it from the perspective of who's on your side. And what you have to do is get that buyer on your side to begin with.
Yes.
And then the rest of the process is a hell of a lot easier.
Well, it's like, what's the first thing you sell is you sell yourself. I mean,
correct.
You still need salespeople at the end
of the
day.
That's correct.
I don't even like the word relationship. I don't even teach that. I think about it. Sometimes when you take the word relationship, it's a dirty word. Those two folks had relations. Sometimes that can be dirty, right? I actually like the word rapport. I think rapport is what we do. I think relationships an outcome versus something we do. I think rapport is something we do. I think we got to connect with people. Then we got to build credibility with them. I'm not saying this is in any particular order. Credibility yields trust. Rapport yields influence. Mm-hmm. And we're winning, like you're saying, Jeff.
Say that again. Wait a minute. Credibility builds trust.
Credibility builds trust. And credibility is everything from how you look to how you present yourself, right? Uh-huh. And how you communicate. Rapport, so that yields trust. So people will listen or might take your advice. Rapport allows you to influence, though, right? They become more open. I think you need both. And I think if you're making it a triangle, that last part of the triangle would be in some kind of level of understanding of the buyer. You almost have to talk like they talk a little bit. When those three things happen in equilateral balance, it allows you to plow into the sales process.
So let's talk about us for just 1 second. We built instant rapport through Philadelphia.
Right.
I mean, it was like 1 second worth of rapport, correct? Yep. Even though you're from like King of Prussia or something, which is bullshit.
You're from Atlantic City, really?
I grew up in Cherry Hill. I went to Temple University. I'm genuine. Yeah. But the bottom line is we have that in common. Regardless yep. of the circumstance, we can always go back to that. It's like yes. a callback in comedy.
It is.
You know, I want to ask you a bunch of questions that will help understand what this process is so that a diehard who's listening to this can get, you don't just give your pitch. If you don't find some trigger, if you don't find something in common, it's going to be wasted and the guy's going to say, I'm not interested.
I read a quick article on Flipboard the other day, and it was how to be some of the best things you can do to build rapport, kind of persuade. And one of the best questions they said, it was interesting because when you read stuff, you look to either validate what you already know or learn something different. And one of the questions is, hey, where are you from? That's one of the quickest, most ways you can connect with anybody, because within five questions, you'll figure something out. Where are mm-hmm. you from?
Yep. Right?
Where's home?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is rapport. Like right now, we have rapport. I wouldn't say we necessarily have a relationship.
No, I don't even like you. But that's a whole, yeah.
I like Jennifer, but.
Yeah, exactly. So do I.
But the point is, you know, I think that's what salespeople fail. They go in with a filter and they go, I got to build a relationship. I got to build a relationship. I'm like, just worry about building some rapport. Stop. Right?
Right.
That's where I do.
But however, you're from Philly. I can say I don't even like you. And it's funny. You say that to somebody from California, they go, really? You don't like me? What did I do wrong?
But you wouldn't do that because you...
It's totally crazy.
It's a different level of rapport.
I loved your analogy to Waze because if you use Waze, it tells you where the hazards are.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Yeah.
And in any sales conversation, there's going to be a hazard.
Yeah, and if you make a wrong turn, it reroutes you. I thought that was brilliant too.
Yeah.
And it seems like what you're talking about right now, the credibility, trust, rapport, influence, that can all give you a home court advantage when you're at an away game. So it's like you need those things to create what you would have if you were home.
It definitely does. And you know, salespeople struggle with how to build rapport. And I'm not a big believer that you got to do it your way. You got to do it at your comfort level, but you got to address the other person also. And it does create a level of comfort for everybody. It settles everybody down. It's just like you get a lot of young salespeople. We get a lot of older salespeople too that think that pleasantries are actually part of the sales process. They're not. Like if we're in pleasantries, that you go to places in the world, you wouldn't have pleasantries with people. Like Germans hate pleasantries, mm-hmm. right? A lot of Southeast Asia, they're very. I live in Dublin, Ohio, which is kind of the mecca of Honda America. And in my neighborhood, I have some Japanese auto execs, and they're very uncomfortable when you ask personal questions. So there's all kinds of ways to actually build rapport with people. It's just not like, it's not one question. It's time. It's connecting. It's a feel.
Where does emotion come into that?
Well, you know, I think all in, it's we're people, so emotions involved in the whole damn thing, no matter what you do, right? And people sell to people.
I hear so many people say lately, well, I'm an introvert, so I don't know how to do that. What would you say to someone who thinks that they're an introvert and therefore can't be
get a job at Walmart?
No, because I actually think introverts, some of them make the best salespeople.
Oh, I do too. Well, you got to look at sales in two halves. And anytime we do really long engagements with clients, and one concept that's really important is sales is half art and sales is half science, right? So it doesn't make you quite an engineer and it doesn't make you quite an artist. It makes you an architect. So nothing's built to scale, right? So you have some salespeople that are just really just people, maybe not be as good as the process, but you could have some folks that, you know, like you're saying, an introvert, that might not be great at the people, but are great at the process. The key is to blend, right? And I think that's where that comes from. There are, and then a lot of people too, my brother Jason works with Bank of America. And if you read any kind of profile on him, like a disc or something like that, it would say that he's more introverted. But if you met him, you'd be like, no way. Mm-hmm. You could offset your hard wiring with skills based on what you need to accomplish in your world, right?
Well, that's, people say that to me, like, there's no way, Jen, you're an introvert. And I'm like, no, I am 100% an introvert. And like Jeffrey would be like, no, you're not. He's like, you're so friendly and you want to meet people. I'm like, but I am deep down an introvert. So I get it about your brother.
You develop behaviors that, you know, needed to offset.
Exactly. Exactly.
So diehards, I want to just customize one thing that Tyson's talking about. Where are you from is one way of asking a question that engages somebody, but I modify it and say, where did you grow up?
Yep.
And the reason I modify that is that I want them to picture the house that they grew up in and their parents and their siblings, if they're still alive, whatever the circumstance is. I want to create an immediate emotional attraction. And where are you from? Somebody might say Cleveland.
Right.
But where did you grow up? They're thinking 125 Graham Street.
Right.
And the house and the bedroom and all the other stuff that goes with it. It's subtle, but it's very powerful as you're trying to establish some kind of common interest. Rapport is one thing. Common interest is a whole other.
Absolutely. And that's how you start getting there. Another good question, Jeff, too, is we do a lot of sales leadership work is where's home? That's another variation.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you ask me where's home, I would tell you Philly's home. If you ask me where I live, I live in Ohio, right? But
yeah.
Home, you know, that's a variation. But it's so critical. That's where it does get personal.
For sure.
You just don't have a lot of time for that either. So you have variations of sales where it becomes tough to do that stuff.
So I want to switch gears and talk about grit, because you talk about this a lot in your book. And I'm going to read
Not
something.
Not grits, for those of you in the South.
Ugh,
grits is something
grits.
That no one likes.
All right. I'm going to read something from your book and then let's talk about it. You say, successful people are concerned with pleasing outcomes. Unsuccessful people are concerned with a pleasing process. A successful person is totally focused on the result. An unsuccessful person is worried about how it feels doing it.
Ooh.
So,
Jen, nice research.
Let's, we can thank Adam later.
Got it.
But so let's talk about, how do you even develop grit? And then once you develop it, how do you know that you have it?
Everybody, including you, including me, needs a little help. Even if you have trouble admitting it. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. It's just that simple. And if your sales needs help, it may be time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy and gamified way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn some new advanced strategies to close the next deal. You know, sales, closing. That's what it's all about. Or creating the atmosphere where the other person wants to buy. We have hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting, you name it. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge anywhere on the planet that you can actually use 1 minute after you learn it. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com today and sign up for a free demo. I love free, and so will you.
Yeah, I mean, if I could bottle that and sell that,
that'd be my next
You know, the concept came from a there was a pamphlet written in the, and it was a speech actually given in the 1940s by a guy named Albert Ian Gray. He worked for Prudential and he was a salesperson for Prudential. And you can actually download the PDF, and it's called The Common Denominator of Success. So he studied success, what at the time what he thought made a successful salesperson, and he said salespeople. Or successful people are broken down into two parts: pleasing methods, pleasing results. Right. That's kind of what I was saying there. And he said, he went on to say that successful people form the habits of doing things unsuccessful people don't like to do. Ooh. I'll say it again: successful people form the habits of doing things unsuccessful people don't like to do. So there's a gal in Philly. I think her name's Angela Duckworth. She wrote a book called Grit. Right, and she's I think she's at UPenn or was at UPenn. And she uses this example in the book where she says, you know, if I say prodigy to you, you might say, like an 8-year-old pianist that can play Mozart by their ear.
I hate those people.
Exactly. Cause I was never one of those, but she goes on to say, or you think of this prodigy mathematician wise, but she goes on to say, when she does the research, you don't see all the time they put into becoming that prodigy. Right? All the hours, all the practice on the piano, the bleeding knuckles, all that stuff. And I think that grit is just that desire to go that extra mile to put the prep in. I mean, there's so many salespeople today that think like, hey, you know, after I'm done work, you know, it's done. I'm like, no. Like, why are you writing your proposal during work hours? Should be on the freaking phone. And they're like, oh, it's my personal life. I'm like, isn't it all your life at the end of the day? So I think it's that.
Exactly.
My definition is that prep, that desire to, you know, the best way I can look at it, I have three sons. I have two that have played AAA hockey. My youngest son has never played AAA hockey. And I watch his work ethic as compared to the other two. At the end of the day, his grit level is way higher, even though he didn't play at the level they did. He's downstairs shooting pucks when nobody tells him. The other ones I have to remind. He just goes downstairs and does it. Mm. Right? You think he's this baby of the family, you know, he'd be a little softer. Actually, he's a little harder.
Wow.
It's a grit factor.
When you're training someone, can you tell if they have that grit factor?
You know, I'm asked that question all the time. When we look at successful people in pro sports, we know that salespeople in pro sports, one out of three actually go the distance. So I always say to an incoming sales class, I says, look to your left to right, only one of you last 3 years. And then managers and shit, they get upset. They're like, why'd you say that? I'm like, well, I mean, why lie to them?
Like, right.
Some are going to make it because they don't want to. Some are just going to fail or get another job, and one's going to make it. And that grit factor is usually that person that puts in the extra hours. In my book, I read about a guy named Joel Adams. He works for the Clippers right now. 4 years ago, he got diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. He had a golf ball-sized tumor in the back of his head.
Not good.
18-hour surgery. Should have been 24. He was out in 18. He's back to work in 3 weeks. Joel's gritty. I don't think you could teach that. He wasn't the most skilled guy. I've known him since he was younger. He's just gritty.
I think it's like an internal desire. You just have to like have it. You know, it has to be within you, or you have to develop it at a young age at some point to want it.
I think we're so worried about building these sales cultures that people feel they belong.
Right.
Yeah. Like Maslow's hierarchy of needs: survival, security, then belonging. Right. And we're so worried about giving everybody a hug. And you know what? In sales, it doesn't work. It's all Dr. Seuss at the end of the day. You'll play lonely games too, games you can't win because they'll be against you. Right.
Like, yep.
Like, I don't know why we're so soft with salespeople now, because we're asking them to do something really hard. And you know what? I was with a company 2 weeks ago down in Dallas, affiliated with the Cowboys. And I'm like, hey, why don't you guys give one more award out for working hard? What participation trophy? A hustle award. You give three people hustle awards. Like, I come from like the Chris Rock theory. Like, you know how that old routine, he said, I take care of my kids. And he goes, well, you're supposed to. Why
right.
work hard?
Exactly.
You're supposed to. Mm-hmm.
Put down that coffee.
Exactly.
That's.
Down the freak. Work hard. What do you mean you're trying? I don't pay you to try. I don't try to pay you either.
Exactly. Yep. No, I explain people. I'm not teaching you how to sell. I'm teaching you to think.
Yes.
And if I can get them to think then I can, where am I in this particular situation? How do I establish more rapport? How do I ask the right question? What do I say here? What do I do here? That's the real deal. Otherwise, you're going by a script and you're screwed. Like, they didn't follow the script. And
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So
there you go.
So another thing you talk about in your book, I just want to end on this because I think it's very aligned to our thinking and especially one of Jeffrey's quotes. But you say, if you think about it, the buying process is the sales process inverted. Why people buy is how you sell.
I got to give Jeff credit for that.
Thank you very kindly for violating my copyright law.
You didn't say exactly that way, but no. You're the first person ever got me to think about that. You were speaking in Vegas when I was with Carnegie, and it was before, probably right around 2000 or so, I would say, maybe 2001. And you were talking about, you're in your red shirt, you're talking about why people buy. And I'm sitting there going, what do they buy? Well, how they buy, you got to talk to them exactly how they would buy and just use their language. And we're too smart for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But you got to take every part of the sales process and break it down. You got to address the fact that if you call somebody today on the phone, they're probably going to see you as an interruption, right?
Correct.
So you got to talk at that way. So you got to invert the process. That's what people miss. They miss it royally.
There's a question that I've asked for years and it works. Are you in the middle of 100 things or 1,000 things?
It's a big difference, right?
And they go, just 100. I say, we have a couple minutes then, right?
Five.
But the bottom line is, look at you. You're smiling. Yep. I've taken you right off your game. Whatever the objection you had was, it's totally gone. And I'm into laughing. I'm into smiling. And if I can engage diehards, if you're doing this and you're not making someone smile, look at your presentation. Look at your script. If there's nothing funny in there, you're screwed.
That's right.
Plain and simple.
As a person, right, man? Like people sell to people still at the end of the day. We're not selling to robots. We're selling to people. Connect with them.
Chapter 8 of the Little Red Book of Selling. If you can make them laugh, you can make them buy. But you have to lead with that. Like, I lead with humor. When I give a speech to somebody, I lead with something that will make them laugh within the first minute.
You're engaging in that minute, and that's what it is with the sales talk. You gotta engage in that.
So why wouldn't a script have engagement from the first minute?
It just amazes me because a lot of these people develop scripts and stuff. I can't tell you how many organizations we go into, and we usually sit down with senior management. We talk about their culture. We talk about how salespeople are paid. We talk about their KPIs. We talk about management and leadership style. So once we start getting kind of their scripts, right, or their call flows down, we start looking and it's so salesperson leaning and not buyer leaning.
Yeah.
We have to go and change their language to talk in buyer's language. And it starts with them as a person. Like, you're not recognizing you're talking to a person here. Use their freaking name.
And diehards, let me explain something that you need to understand. If your value proposition or your value prop has the word "we" in it, it's wasted. The value proposition has to be in terms of the customer or it doesn't work.
Yep.
It's not what we do for you. It's how you benefit from what we do for you or what the outcome is from what we do for you, or else forget it.
And that's where you're going to talk like the client. Our CEOs like you are saying blah 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 blah. You got to know that language. It's, you know what? Think about this, Jeff. It's, they got to communicate in this format: them, us, and then we. So them as the customer. Then here's what we do. Here's us, and then here's what I'm suggesting that we both do together. And they communicate backwards because they're so it's just wild.
I have to establish credibility. No, you don't, dude. They've already Googled you. They don't know exactly who you are, right? Or they wouldn't have taken the phone call.
Right. Well, and the credibility, the only credibility I'm worried about teaching them is like, look, you got to come off trustworthy. You got to come off and you present in a way that makes sense. You got to have some sequence to it, right? You got to know, but most people don't. That's where salespeople struggle today. I'll be in business a long time because I see the salespeople that are churning out today. I'm like, oh,
yeah, but
a lot of work to do.
It almost makes you happy, doesn't it?
It does, like being in the funeral business, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You're always in business, people are going to die, right? They're always going to hire salespeople.
Another fantastic episode of Sell or Die is now in the books.
Let's let the listener be the judge of that.
You can be. Subscribe. Rate and review our show today. In fact, right now.
Or if that sounds too complicated, tell a friend.
Tell both your friends.
Because if you're not selling,
you're dying.
We're leaving.
Au revoir.
Shalom.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.